I need to start making notes for myself to remind myself of some announcements. I feel like every week I'm forgetting a few things. We have lunch this week. We're going to have lunch this week on Tuesday. It says in the bulletin it'll be on Wednesday, but we're going to move it to Tuesday. A couple folks can be there on Tuesday. Down at the Red Door Tavern in Grandview Heights. Or Grandview. I have no idea if this place is a good place to eat or not to eat, so we'll see. Yes, we have the Ron Cole stamp of approval. I was hoping to have somebody, so Ron Cole's on board. So Tuesday at noon, we're going to do that. And then also, I really intended to give you a little kind of commercial for our class that we're starting this morning. I'm really excited about it. We've been lugging through the Old Testament for like 6 months, and I'm sure we could not talk about Zephaniah for a few months, and everybody would be okay with that. And so we're going to change gears totally. And beginning this morning, our teens are going to be with us the next several months, and we're going to talk about technology and how that relates to our faith and the impact and some of the struggles that it presents to us, all kinds of opportunities, while at the same time, all kinds of difficulties. So this morning, we're just going to kind of talk a little bit and kind of lay out the next couple of weeks as we kind of look forward to doing some of the things that we're going to be talking about. So I'm excited about getting that started. I hope you'll join us this morning for that. But first, we're going to work through this morning, and I'm going to try to do my best to somehow connect the prophet Jeremiah and the King Jehoiachin and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Somehow today, we're going to do this in one big magical loop. So if I can do that successfully, it will be a good day. If not, then, well, you can blame me, right? I mean, that's a pretty tall order. But I want to begin where perhaps this election season has left you, asking yourselves the question, what is the point? Like, what is the point of anything, right? Like, what is the point of life? What is the point of getting up in the morning and attempting to do anything? Because you have this realization, even from the time you celebrate graduation and celebrate the birth of a child, but at some point we have to let the child know that they're just getting closer to dying from the time that they're born. Like, that's all we are, is on this march to death. At least it's not Mother's Day, right? You thought the Mother's Day was bad. I've held off a day to do today. And I know you're thinking, like, come on, you have said the exact opposite thing on that very stage many times. It's all about perspective, and of course you can choose to focus on the negative things. And I agree with that. But you have to acknowledge the fact that all of the evil things in our world, it's like this giant elephant in the room. Like, we all acknowledge the fact that there is a lot of stuff in life that's bad. And you look in the mirror and you realize that somehow your face is getting older. And you know, let me speak to the young people for a second. Okay, Snapchat has got this cool thing where you can face swap, right? The horrifying thing about face swap is when you swap faces with your kids and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so old. What happened? Because when it's just their face, I'm not that old, but wrinkles show up and all of a sudden age spots are happening. And I'm almost 38 years old, and somehow I've peaked physically like years ago. Like, I'm on the downslide. And so physically we just kind of go shoot up, and then it's this long, slow drudge that some of you are closer and closer to the end of. And I know you well enough to know that it doesn't get better. So thanks for that, all of you depressing old people. And we know that. Like, we watch commercials on TV that just, they warn us about all the terrible things about getting old. Put this cream on your face so you don't look older. Take these pills so you don't feel older. Put this cream on your joints so they don't feel older. But we know it's inevitable. And a couple gray hairs turn to a lot of gray hairs, turn to all white hairs, turn to Ron Cole. Just all of a sudden. Like, and then there's the financial realities, right? We're going to save all our money so that when we're old, we'll be taken care of and we won't have to worry about it. But that's a myth for 95% of us, maybe 98% of us. I've seen people in my own family, they work hard, they do what they're supposed to do, they have a retirement, and their whole life savings is gone in 2 years of the nursing home, or even less than that. And so there's this giant elephant in the room that we have to address, and it's like, what's the point, man? There's a lot of negative stuff. It It's funny, you see, Clark, I mentioned this at a baseball tournament, getting smoked this whole weekend. It's funny, they're just getting crushed. And there's all these parents who take their kids to these competitions, and they're going to make the pros, or they're going to get a college scholarship. And it's like life is like that. We're just hoping for all this stuff to happen. But in the back of all of our minds, we realize it's probably not going to happen. And sometimes you wonder, why do people have kids? Like, you have kids knowing that some of them are going to get divorced, and some of them are going to get addicted to stuff, some of them are going to just know unbearable pain. And it's like, what's the point? And Chris Cole's already alluded to the fact that this is a terrible sermon. What a terrible idea for today. But I think this is what was going on in Jeremiah's time. This is the mentality that everybody had. I mean, they're looking around and they see this big Babylonian empire. Just, man, it was like the Russians in the 60s. Like, man, I don't know if we're going to be able to hold off this empire. I don't know if this is going to work. And everybody's looking around, and they had this great king named Josiah. And you guys know about Josiah. He was just this great reforming king, and he was restoring the land, and he was wiping out the places of false worship. And there was this big kind of, you know, excitement building. And then he dies. And whether it's the quarterback of a football team for a long time or the president of the United States is very successful, the next person in line has got an awfully tough job. And his son lasts 3 months. 3 months, and he's gone. And so Jeremiah is prophesying at a time where they've had three different rulers in a year. Like, imagine that. If we had three presidents in a year, you think this is chaos. Like, imagine that. All this transition of power, and nobody's really sure what's going on. And we've already talked about a couple weeks ago Jeremiah's call into this. Jeremiah, I'm going to make you a prophet, and you're going to go with the word of the Lord, and it's going to be a mess. And nobody's going to listen to you, and it's just going to be difficult. We're going to pick up the story right about in the middle of the book, right about Jeremiah 26. I hope you've been trying to plod through this book, and I say plod very carefully because it is a plod. But something happens in the middle of the book which is very interesting. We get a little bit of narrative. We get a little story to kind of put in context. And part of the story is very depressing. It's just the reality of life in Israel as they're just under Babylonian onslaught. They're taking their people. As a matter of fact, you get the picture that they went in and they took their artisans and their craftsmen. They took all the best contributors to their society, and they take those all back to Babylon. And so the people that are left are without a leader, and it's just a big chaotic mess. And once again, we're struck with Jeremiah's words. So this is the context that you're called to prophesy in, Jeremiah. And nobody's going to listen to you. As a matter of fact, he gets up, and he doesn't have this sweet old lady at the back of the synagogue who comes up to him and gives him a hug and says, Jeremiah, that was a great sermon. Pats him on the back, great job. Instead, what happens, everybody sticks their fingers in their ear and scream, oh, we don't want to hear it. This man's a false prophet. He's a false teacher. And they want to kill him. And so it's this weird, I think, situation that all preachers wrestle with. Is because when you read the Bible, most of the time, the people who speak publicly for God are not warmly embraced and don't get a lot of hugs in the back row and tell them what a great job they did. Instead, they run for their lives. And that's what Jeremiah does. He has to flee for his life. As a matter of fact, he was ready to be executed. And it wasn't until some of the elders of the community said, hey, you know what? We got this scroll from Micah, and it appears as though Micah was saying something awfully similar to what Jeremiah was saying, so maybe we shouldn't kill him just yet. And so they let him live. And so Jeremiah, once among many times, survives by just kind of the skin of his teeth, you know, barely gets by. But there were other prophets. There was the prophet Uriah. Uriah was saying a lot of the same things that Jeremiah was saying. He thought Jeremiah had a bad call. Uriah has the same calling, only he doesn't even get a book in the Old Testament. He gets nothing. He flees to Egypt, but he doesn't realize that the Egyptian leadership basically put the Israelite leadership in place. And so he gets on the phone, the red phone, and he says, hey, we got this dude over there named Uriah. You need to take care of him. Uriah's gone. He's killed. And then there's another prophet named Hananiah. Now, Hananiah is a prophet of the Lord, and he has a different message. Jeremiah is saying, hey, judgment. He keeps preaching what he's been preaching. Banging the drum, he's been dranging. Judgment's coming. You need to repent. This is not going to be pretty. And then another guy named Hananiah stands up and he says, you know what, I've got a message from the Lord too. And you're right, the Babylonians have taken over, but it's only going to last a couple of years. Just a couple years. And he thought Jeremiah's calling was bad. And then God comes to him and he says, hey, I want you to take a yoke, this wooden stick, and I want you to put it behind your neck and put your arms over it and put your hands in. And so he's walking around with his stick, and I meant to grab one, but it would have been uncomfortable. And Jeremiah had to do it for a long time, not just like 5 minutes. And Hananiah looks at him and goes, what are you doing? And Jeremiah says, I've had a word of the Lord. We're going to be yoked by the Babylonians. Hananiah comes over and he breaks the yoke. It's made out of wood. He breaks the yoke and he says, no, it's only going to last 2 years. You know what? The Lord has spoken to me. He's broken the yoke. He throws it aside. And Jeremiah is conflicted. Jeremiah is like, wait a second. I've had a word from the Lord. Now I'm hearing something different. And of course, Jeremiah is human nature like all of us. And he's thinking, I hope he's right. I hope Hananiah is right. And so he goes off to be by himself for a little while. And then in Jeremiah chapter 28, God comes to him and he makes sure that Jeremiah knows what's what. About 28 verse 15, the prophet Jeremiah said to Hananiah the prophet, listen, Hananiah, the Lord has not sent you, yet you've persuaded this nation to trust your lies. Therefore, this is what the Lord says, I'm about to remove you from the face of the earth. This very year you're going to die because you did not preach, because you have preached rebellion against the Lord. In the seventh month of that same year, Hananiah the prophet died. And so it's one of those bad news situations, right? God comes to Jeremiah and he says, yeah, Hananiah, I knew he had kind of a less bad news, but he was wrong. And so the bad news is he was wrong. And the other bad news is you were right. This is not going to last just 2 years. This is going to be a while. And so God comes to Jeremiah with a message. So we get all that cleared up. It's a chaotic time. Everybody's trying to figure out what's going on. You have different prophets saying different things. And finally, God comes to Jeremiah and he says, look, I want you to send a message to the exiles. Because everybody's asking the same questions. They haven't unpacked their bags yet. They're trying to figure out, is this going to last just a little while? Because they've heard rumors from Hananiah that this may only be temporary, maybe a year or two or three. The people back in Jerusalem are confused. They don't know what's going on. They're scared to death. I mean, does any of this sound like maybe it relates to today in our country? Maybe. Confusion, worry, fear. And it's interesting, the letter that Jeremiah pens. And so let's look at this letter, because I think in a lot of ways it doesn't even have to be preached. It relates so easily to our situation today. In Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 4, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all of those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. So these are the people in Babylon that have already been taken out of their home. This is what God's message to them is. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too will have sons and daughters. Increase in numbers, don't decrease. Also, seek and the peace and prosperity of the city to which I carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it. Because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Don't let the prophets and diviners among you deceive you. Don't listen to your dreams, to the dreams you encourage them to have. They are prophesying lies to you in my name. I have not sent them, declares the Lord. This is what the Lord says. When 70 years are completed from Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my gracious promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and bring back to you from captivity. I'll gather you from all the other nations and places where I've banished you, declares the Lord. And will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile. You may say the Lord has raised up prophets for us in Babylon, but this is what the Lord says about the kings who sit on David's throne and all the people who remain in this city your countrymen who did not go with you to exile. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty says. I will send the sword, famine, and plague against them, and I will make them the poor, like the poor figs that are so bad they can't be eaten. I will pursue them with the sword, famine, and plague, and will make them abhorrent to all kingdoms of the earth, and an object of cursing and horror, of scorn and reproach among all the nations where I drive them. For they have not listened to my words, declared the Lord, words that I sent to them again and again by my servants, the prophets. And you exiles have not listened either, declares the Lord. Therefore, hear the word of the Lord, all you exiles, for I have sent away from Jerusalem to Babylon. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says about Ahab and all these different folks. I will hand them over to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and he will put them to death before your very eyes. Because of them, all the exiles from Judah who are in Babylon will use this curse. The Lord treats you like Zedekiah and Ahab, from whom the king of Babylon burned in the fire. For they have done outrageous things in Israel. They have committed adultery with their neighbors' wives, and in my name have spoken lies, which I did not tell them to do. I know it and am witness to it, declares the Lord. It's a fascinating letter, right here in the middle of Jeremiah. And you're probably familiar with some of those words, and they get... Chris, that's a great graduation card, right? You can put that on there. Okay, we can agree with that. But when you put it in the context of I'll prosper you and make you great, you've got to consider what was going on. And so God gives Israel basically a twofold message. First of all, he says, hey, go ahead and unpack your bags. This is going to be a while. 70 years, he tells them. He looks at me and he says, you're 37, you're not going to make it. You might as well enjoy it because you're not going back to the promised land. You're 20, not going to make it. You're 10, maybe, just maybe, you'll make it and be one of the elders going in and tell stories about, I heard from my mom and my grandmother and my grandfather about this land. But all you adults, you're not going back. And so just get comfortable. Marry, plant gardens, buy houses, do your thing, is the first part of the message. But the other part of the message is, don't get too comfortable. Unpack your bags, but this is still not your home. Now, if you can't elude and see the illusions that the New Testament picks up on this whole idea, you got to clean your ears out a little bit, right? It's almost exactly the same words that Peter uses in his letter. In chapter 1 and verse 2 and 11, dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Peter picks up on that same imagery that the Jews would have been familiar with, because they had learned that while you're in the diaspora, while you're sent out there among all the nations, get comfortable, but hold on to the promise that there's something greater coming. I think it's fascinating that he even tells them to seek the betterment of the city. Pray for peace. Pray for prosperity for this nation of Babylon. This same nation that just sounds horrific throughout the prophets. They're going to come and slaughter your kids, and they're going to kill you, and they're going to destroy you, and they're wreaking judgment on your behalf. And then Jeremiah 31 turns the script and says, and pray for them. Pray that all goes well for them, because if things go well for them, things go well for you. The Old Testament scholar Walter Brueggemann has an interesting reflection on this text of Jeremiah. He talks about going to his kid's school when he was in fifth grade. And they were doing an American history project. And so they would walk in, and one of the children in the classroom would stand up, and they would say, George Washington was the father of the country. And then all the other kids in the class would chant, and America goes on forever. And then another kid would get up and say, Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. And everybody would stand up and say, America goes on forever. And then another one would get up and say, Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. And there was this chant, and America goes on forever. And Brueggemann, who teaches the Old Testament, was reflecting about how we teach and understand history. And he said, it's interesting because when you study history, you look at the presidents, and you look at the leaders, and the emperors, and the generals of the armies, and we say, those are the people who dictate history. Those are the history writers. This is a presidential election year, and we have these candidates, and everybody is looking, and they're saying, what are the implications of these candidates? Who's going to be the ones to set the chart of history? Are we going to have the first woman president? Are we going to have the first Jewish president? Are we going to have the first Donald Trump president? Which is probably a lot of firsts. And we study history and we look back and we follow the generals and the presidents and the leaders and the people who make the textbooks. And what Jeremiah does is Jeremiah offers us this different vision. He comes from this little village of Anathoth, and he lives among these great power players in the world. The great leader Nebuchadnezzar, who stands today in history books, and Jehoiakim and Jehoiachin and Jehoahaz and all these other weird named kings of Israel. And we look at them like we look at the history books of our own civilization in the West, and we say, these are the power players. This is what dictates what happens in the world. But what Jeremiah does is he gives us this alternate reality. And Jeremiah says, yeah, but that's not really who's taking charge of the world. That's not really who's in charge. Because if that was who was really in charge, Jeremiah would have been gone. He was insignificant. As a matter of fact, he was preaching a message that was very hostile towards the powers that be. If they were the ones truly in charge, Jeremiah would have been gone. And the problem that I see happening in this world is we're beginning to get sucked into that mode of thinking where we think that that's who's in charge. And so our dreams and our visions, just like the people of Israel were captured by the kings and the people in power and charge. And all the while, there are these prophets standing on the outside and the outskirts of the community, yelling inside, trying to get somebody to look at them, wearing the yoke over their head, laying there naked like Ezekiel, and all the things they were doing, trying to get somebody to listen, to say, I know what it looks like. I know that it looks like this is going to happen. But I've got a message from the Lord that says something different. And if the world needs anything today, if we need anything today, we need more prophets like Jeremiah who are willing to stand up and say, I don't know who's going to win the election, but I don't think it really matters. I don't know what war is going to be fought, but I don't know that it really matters who wins. And that just doesn't seem to be a message that's coming out very clearly anymore. Instead, we get sucked into these political conversations and we begin to be passionate about who's going to give us more tax money back, even when Jesus says that the root of all evil is money. Well, it wasn't Jesus, but he would have said basically the same thing. We get caught up in all the things and the promises that they're selling. We want to elect the politician who promises the most money to our military, even as Jeremiah reminds us that it doesn't matter how big your military is. We get caught up in the free stuff that our politicians offer us, even though Jesus teaches us that treasures are in heaven, not on earth. When we get sucked into that thinking, when we start thinking like that, then we begin to lean out of just praying for prosperity and praying for peace in the land, and then we begin to start to listen to some of those false prophets that are among us. Those false prophets that are telling us a different message than what God has already told us. And if we don't see it, and we can't call it out, who will? Then who will? It's one of the most interesting things about the book of Jeremiah. We've talked about it before. He's known as the weeping prophet. It's a depressing book. It's difficult to overstate how negative of a book it is. And yet in the midst of the book, right here, right in the middle, from chapter 29, 31, all the way to about chapter 33, is what's known as the Book of Comfort. These words of just majestic promises that even in the midst of all that Jeremiah was going to face, that somehow he was able to see something so much bigger and so much better. And the challenge for all of us, and if there's any message in the Bible that should just hit us between the eyes, it's when we study Israel being in captivity in this great superpower of Babylon, is we should be able to read these stories and go, this is kind of like it is for us. This is kind of like it is for us. It's a great nation. It's a beautiful nation. It's a powerful nation. It's so similar to Babylon. And we can continue on the message that was given by Jeremiah to pray for peace, to pray for prosperity. The better our nation does, the better the church does. But we have to follow that back end of the message that says, but don't get too comfortable. What are your hopes and dreams? Is it retirement? Is it to make your mark in the world? You have all these great graduation speeches that are going on, talking about all the promises and the hopes. But as a Christian young man or young woman sitting there listening to these speeches, we should be listening thinking, yeah, but I've got bigger plans, right? I've got so much more than what this graduation speaker is hoping to instill in me for prosperity in this land. To refer or allude to another prophet, the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah 62 appeals to a land that he names Beulah land. It's a Hebrew word that means married, fulfilled. And I want to encourage you as you read through the book of Jeremiah that the one thing that he, I think, makes us do is he pushes us past our contentment. He pushes us past what makes us happy in this life and makes us look inside and say, what do you really want? What do you really hope for? Because our decisions that we make every day and the choices that we make are ultimately guided by our vision for life and what we really hope for. And if we're really hoping for Beulah land, then we're not satisfied with the small things that materialism offers us, the promises that our politicians offer us. Our hope is bigger than that. Because ultimately, they're really offering the same thing, aren't they? Donald Trump says we want to make America great again. Barack Obama says we have the audacity of hope. I mean, it's the same thing, right? They're just saying, hope in me so that I can give you something back, whether it's the country, whether it's your money, whatever it is. And as Christians, we listen to that message through the lens of Jeremiah and say, that's great, but our hope is bigger and better than that. May we long for something bigger and better than what's offered for us. Let's listen to the words of this song before we close it out.